a way to use my expertise without fighting in the trenches like this guy.
He gestured with his thumb at Darcy and added cheerfully,
If there was any lingering doubt that I'm a lightweight.
There wasn't, Liz thought. But Jane said, with more force than Liz would have expected, I think you're being too hard on yourself. If working in an ER isn't what you want to do, you shouldn't be miserable. Was she, Liz wondered, talking only about medicine? The waiter approached, and Darcy said,
Shall we get a bottle of wine? Jane, I don't know if you're drinking.
Both he and Chip already had a cocktail in front of them. I'm not, Jane said. Liz said, But your doctor self sounded impressively non-judgmental, Darcy. The expression on Darcy's face then was hard to read. It might have been irritation, and Liz thought, You're the one who invited us here.
I'm sure Jane knows that she doesn't need to answer to me, Darcy said,
but he said it stiffly. And it occurred to Liz for the first time that he was not entirely at ease, which was all that was necessary for the last of her own nervousness to vanish. Besides, between them, the two men at this table had broken both her and her sister's hearts. They didn't deserve her nervousness. She said, Chip, have you ever considered auditioning for that dance competition show?
Believe it or not, it's very hard to win a spot. Not to mention, I'm sure I don't have what it takes. No, if I have any self-respect, the eligible reunion will be my reality TV swan song. If I stay in television, I'd like it to be more service-oriented.
As the four of them selected, then received their entrees, Chip spoke the most, Liz the second most, and Darcy and Jane only intermittently. Chip never uttered the words pregnant or pregnancy, but seemingly without discomfort alluded several times to Jane's condition, inquiring about how she was feeling, where she planned to deliver, and whether she envisioned continuing to teach yoga after the baby was born. Darcy paid for the meal. When Liz pulled her wallet from her purse, he shook his head sternly, and after he had passed his credit card to the waiter, Jane went to use the restroom. When she stood, so did both men. In her absence, Chip said to Liz,
She really seems good.
She is.
And she's well settled in Rhinebeck, it sounds like.
Did he wish to be contradicted? During the meal, Liz had concluded that they were all gathered so that Chip and Darcy could officially absolve themselves. They could go forth into the rest of their lives confident that they hadn't wronged the Bennett sisters in any deep or permanent way, assured that they were all on waspily amicable terms. And this belief that they were entitled to absolution, it seemed the most self-indulgent act of all. But were they gathered instead for Chip to attempt to rekindle the relationship? The possibility was intriguing and alarming. Carefully, Liz said, I don't think she's made a concrete plan for after the baby comes.
I'm glad she...
Chip began, at which point his phone rang. When he checked the screen, he said,
If you'll forgive me, it's Caroline.
He stepped away from the table, and Darcy and Liz were alone. Do you want to join the call? The question came out as less joking and more bitter than Liz had been aiming for. Darcy looked at her curiously. Liz held up her own phone. I just downloaded a solitaire app so I can keep myself entertained. When he still said nothing, she heard herself add, That sounds like a euphemism for masturbation, doesn't it? In her head, she thought, Liz, stop. I command you to stop at once. Aloud, she said, Why are you in New York anyway? He nodded once toward the table.
This dinner.
No, seriously. Why?
I flew to New York this afternoon, and I fly back to Cincinnati at 6 a.m.
A new confusion seized Liz. Does Chip leave tomorrow? she asked. Darcy shook his head.
He is here for a few days.
Then he said,
It sounds like your parents are coming to terms with Lydia's marriage.
Liz squinted. Who'd you hear that from?
It's good news, isn't it?
Yes, Liz said. It is good news.
You also might be interested to know that Georgie has agreed to donate Pemberley as a historic landmark. She wants us to perform some type of ritual farewell before the handoff, and I understand I have you to thank for that.
Actually, that's Jane's bailiwick, not mine, Liz said. I did mention it to Georgie, though. Liz wanted to inquire after Georgie's health, but the enmity between herself and Darcy prevented her. She was grateful when Jane reappeared, and a minute later, so did Chip.
I hope my manners won't seem lacking if I suggest that just Jane and I go for a little stroll, he said. Jane, would you consider it?
Jane flushed radiantly. She glanced at Liz. Are we expected anywhere else tonight? Which Liz knew her sister was fully aware they were not. Nope, Liz said. Turning back toward Chip, Jane said, Then I'd love to. Liz and Chip embraced once more, and Jane somberly thanked Darcy for the meal. Again, Liz envied the way Jane was compelled to show Darcy neither phony friendliness nor conspicuous derision. Jane and Chip had scarcely left the table when Liz asked, Is he trying to get back together with her?
That's for him to answer, Darcy said.
Liz rolled her eyes. You put way too much stock in discretion. He smiled thinly.
Or maybe you put too little.
A silence arose, a silence in which neither of them looked elsewhere or fiddled with their phones. He seemed to be scrutinizing her. If she wasn't careful, Liz felt, she might blurt out, How could you have picked Caroline Bingley over me? Surely, surely he had to say something. But no, he said nothing at all. And when Liz could withstand it no longer, she said, I guess you'll be getting up at the crack of dawn, huh?
A car is coming to my hotel at 4.
In that case, you shouldn't even go to sleep. You should go on a bender.
I imagine my patients tomorrow would prefer I didn't.
Did he understand that she had, under the guise of a joke, been putting out a feeler about if he'd like to get an after-dinner drink? She scooted back from the table and reached for her coat. Then I'll let you get your rest. She pulled her purse onto one shoulder. Take care, Darcy. It was borderline rude, she knew, not to wait for him and leave the restaurant together. It was borderline cold to wave with false jauntiness rather than exchanging either an Ohio hug or a New York kiss on the cheek. But he was welcome to complain about her manners to Caroline. What did it matter at this point? And anyway, when the tears burst over Liz's eyelids and streamed down her cheeks, she wanted to be away from him, alone on the sidewalk in the cool night. Chapter 162. Liz had fallen asleep on the couch in her living room while waiting for Jane. Thus, the lights were on and the novel Liz had been reading had dropped to the floor when Jane knocked. Liz was still only partially alert as she opened the apartment door, saying, I really had no idea Chip would be there. You believe me, right? Jane rested one hand atop her belly. Lizzie, he proposed. What? Are you serious? Jane nodded. Holy shit, Liz said. What did you say? Jane was practically whispering. I said yes. Oh my God, Liz embraced her sister. This is insane. Start at the beginning. Let me get some water. Want any? No, thanks. Liz glanced at her watch and saw that it was 3:30.
"Did you guys have sex?" she asked.
Jane moved from the sink in Liz's galley kitchen to the living room. As gracefully as was possible for a woman 24 weeks pregnant, she perched on the arm of the couch, to which Liz had returned. Jane's expression was both bashful and joyous. She said, "I was worried he'd be..." She waved a hand over her midsection. "Freaked out. And I think it was strange for him at first. But then it was really nice."
"Was this before or after he'd proposed?"
"After. Lizzie, I know you think he acted flaky, but I was ambivalent too. The situation was so confusing. And now we both know what we want."
"I take it he didn't have a ring."
Jane shook her head.
"He had no idea how I'd react."
Her brow furrowed. "There's kind of a crazy part to all of this. The eligible reunion will start airing in January, and obviously the network wants what happens to be a surprise. For all those shows, they make the contestants sign confidentiality agreements, and the agreements last until the whole season has aired. Even if a couple falls in love during the shoot, they're not really supposed to see each other for months until after the last episode. If they violate the contract, they're liable for the entire budget of the show, which is something like $5 million. Jane took a sip of water, then went on. "The reunion took place at this fancy compound by the ocean in Malibu, and Chip said from the minute he got there, he knew he'd made a mistake. Not in leaving medicine, but in leaving me. He'd let his doubts about being a doctor, which he'd had for years, cloud his judgment about our relationship, and after he found out about my pregnancy, he was overwhelmed. But when he got to California and was supposed to be in romantic settings with other women, all he could think about was me. He wants to raise my baby as his child. The catch is that because of the contract he signed, we can't be together for at least 4 months, unless, and this is the crazy part, he thinks that if I'm willing to do it, we can get married now as part of an eligible special. During the reunion, he talked a lot about me with a producer he'd known from his first season, and she tried to convince him to invite me on the show, to come out to Malibu, but he thought that wasn't fair to me, because the whole thing would have been filmed. In fact, he wasn't even planning to reach out to me at all until Darcy suggested it. Chip was worried I hated him. Anyway, he saw this producer last week, and she's pretty sure that if we get married on the air, the network will pay for the wedding. And afterward, before the special runs, they'll rent a house for us somewhere secluded while we wait for the baby."
"That's bonkers," Liz said.
"He's not pressuring me to do it," Jane said. "He said the choice is mine, and if we have to wait until March or April to be together, it's fine. But Lizzie, by March I'll have a newborn. I'll be in a different place emotionally, and so will Chip. I want us to become parents together. There's no guarantee that if we try to pick up later where we left off tonight, it'll work." After a few seconds, Liz said, "I wish I didn't agree with you. Here's what I don't get, though. Why can't you just move out to L.A., rent an apartment, and see him really discreetly?"
"I asked that, too. And he said he thinks the producers won't allow it. He thinks they're okay with us being together if it's sort of under their control, or if they're benefiting from it, but otherwise, they'll say it's too great a risk. Chip gets recognized much more in L.A. than in other places."
"Jesus," Liz said. "And I thought Mom tried to boss us around."
Both sisters were quiet, and Liz added, "Just the idea of you, the sweet yogini, having your wedding nationally televised. It's very weird."
"I know," Jane said. "I used to have such specific opinions about what my wedding would be like. Remember that game we'd play where we'd pick out our bridesmaids? but that was a long time ago. I'm 40, and I'm about to have a kid. I don't care about the ceremony. I'd rather just be married to Chip and get on with our lives.
Jane glanced at Liz.
Maybe I've lost my mind.
Well, I agree that you'd be ratings gold, Liz said. I tune in to see Chip Bingley marry a beautiful pregnant lady.
But do you realize what you'd be opening yourself up to? You'd be on the cover of celebrity gossip magazines.
Really?
Yes, Jane, without a doubt. You'd have to sign a contract just like Chip. And one of the things it would require you to do is talk to the media. Plus, tons of trashy websites that you hadn't talked to would say whatever they want about you guys.
Did Chip mention compensation?
Like money?
Liz nodded.
Vaguely, Jane said. At this point, it's still not definite that Eligible wants to do a wedding special with us. The next step is for Chip and me both to sit down with his agent and that producer.
Has the producer seen a picture of you?
I don't know.
I bet Chip showed her one.
Trust me, Jane. They'll want to do it. The only way I'll agree to it is if all of you are there, Jane said. Mom and Dad, obviously, and you and Mary and Kitty and Lydia, and now Ham. Do you think they'll go on TV for my wedding?
Liz laughed.
Some of them. Will you?
Sure, Liz said. For you.
Does this all seem crazy?
Yes, Liz said.
But I think you and Chip genuinely love each other.
She patted her sister's arm.
I'm glad he wised up.
Chapter 163. Almost immediately, a maelstrom of activity was swirling. The following evening, while it was still afternoon in Los Angeles, Liz, Jane, and Chip participated via speakerphone from Liz's apartment in a conversation with both Chip's agent, whose name was David Scanlon, and the Eligible producer with whom Chip had discussed Jane, whose name was Ann Lee. It was decided that 2 days hence, when Chip flew back to Los Angeles, Jane also would journey west on a different flight. In the meantime, Jane would begin filling out the many forms meant to facilitate her background check.
Why do they need to do a background check on me if we already know each other?
Jane asked Chip when the call had concluded. Chip and Liz answered at the same time.
They're being thorough, Chip said, as Liz said,
because they don't want Chip's family to sue them if you turn out to be a psychopath who kills him on your wedding night.
Jane and Chip were seated on the couch, holding hands, and Jane looked at him. I've never even met your parents, she said. I hope they're not mad at me.
How could anyone be mad at you? Chip said, and he kissed her.
But given that Chip's parents were also the parents of Caroline, Liz thought, who knew what they'd be like? Even if they were genial in the extreme, watching their son marry a pregnant woman they'd never met on national television could not be a cherished dream. Then again, since that same son had chosen to appear on 2 separate seasons of Eligible, perhaps his parents would understand how much worse than Jane they might have fared with a daughter-in-law. As for Caroline herself, spending time in her presence at the wedding filled Liz with a dread, exacerbated by the assumption that Darcy would be Caroline's date. For no one other than Jane would Liz have subjected herself to such circumstances. Chapter 164. In the morning, Chip and Jane rented a car and drove together to Rhinebeck, where they would stay the night before Jane collected her belongings and bid farewell to Amanda and Prisha. The following day, Amanda called Liz and said,
"This is really what Jane wants? To get married on TV to the guy who dumped her the minute he found out she was pregnant?" Even under normal circumstances, Liz found Amanda a bit intimidating. If Liz hadn't suspected Amanda would scoff at the idea, she'd have loved to write about her as a woman who dared. And Liz tried not to sound meek or defensive as she said, "I certainly didn't try to talk Jane into it. And if you're upset about her quitting her job, you should talk to her, not me. We can find another yoga instructor, but I've always thought Chip Bingley was a total phony." "Had you met him before yesterday?" "No, but I swear those were crocodile tears he cried in his season finale." Quickly, Amanda added, "I don't watch the show, but Prisha does. Liz, if Chip leaves Jane again, I'll do him bodily harm."
"I'll do it for you," Liz replied.
"Prisha wants to talk to you," Amanda said. There was a lull as the phone was passed, then Prisha's excited voice.
"Do we get to come to the wedding?" she asked.
Chapter 165. What the producers envisioned, Jane explained to Liz over the phone from California, was a 3-day event at a resort in Palm Springs. The first night would be separate, simultaneous bachelor and bachelorette parties. The second night would be the rehearsal dinner. The third afternoon would be the wedding. Jane and Chip would be permitted to invite 20 guests total, all of whom would stay at the resort and all of whose travel expenses would be covered. The couple would receive a payment of $200,000, which Chip insisted should be Jane's and which Jane insisted should be equally divided among her family members after Chip's agent, now their shared agent, kept his 10%.
"You don't have to pay me to come to your wedding," Liz said.
She'd been washing dishes when Jane called, and she turned off the faucet.
"It would give me more peace of mind if you opened a secret bank account and put the money there. Are you and Chip signing a prenup?"
"We haven't talked about it," Jane said. "But if we didn't trust each other, we wouldn't be getting married."
Said like a woman blinded by love, Liz thought. But not signing a prenuptial agreement could only be to her sister's advantage.
"They want everything to happen 2 weeks from now," Jane was saying. "From a Wednesday to a Friday, because that's when they can rent out the whole resort. Do you think that'll work for people?"
"Kitty probably has the most rigid schedule of any of us now that she's in school," Liz said. "But I bet she can miss a few days."
"One of the things the agent negotiated is that the hair and makeup artists will help all of us get ready, not just me," Jane said. "So maybe Kitty can even learn from them."
"And if she doesn't, that's fine too," Liz said. "Jane, your wedding can be at least a little bit about you."
"I haven't told you the reason the producers want to do it so soon." Jane sounded wry. "The quote from Ann Lee is, 'Because you're not getting any smaller, Jane, and the fantasy that American women have of marrying Chip Bingley doesn't include looking like a whale.'"
"Wow," Liz said. "Tactful."
"No, she said it in a funny way," Jane said. "I wasn't offended. The producers are really cool and smart. They remind me of you and your magazine friends."
"They're not your friends. Their goal is to make entertaining TV."
"I know," Jane seemed untroubled. "Although, they're giving us free rings, too. Did I tell you that? I'm sure some jewelry maker is doing it as part of an advertising deal." But Liz could hear the cynicism in her tone, and more gently she added, "What do they look like?"
Jane laughed.
"Your guess is as good as mine."
Chapter 166.
"I have something to tell you all," Jane said into the speakerphone. "Actually, a few things." It was Thanksgiving Day, and Jane was back in New York. She and Liz were expected in 2 hours, along with a dish of marshmallow-topped sweet potatoes, at the Park Slope house of Liz's editor, Talia.
In Cincinnati, the Bennetts would celebrate the holiday, as they often did at the Lucases. It had been after much prodding from Liz as well as Jane that their family members had assembled in advance of the Thanksgiving meal in Mr. and Mrs. Bennett's living room at the Grassmore. Jane hesitated, and Mr. Bennett said,
"Do go on."
Jane and Liz made eye contact, and Jane bit her lip and furrowed her brows. Liz nodded.
"I'm pregnant," Jane said.
There were then several family members exclaiming. It was difficult for Liz to determine if their exclamations were supportive or oppositional, and Jane said,
"Wait, there's more.
The way I got pregnant is using an anonymous sperm donor. The baby is due in late February." In a high, emotional tone, Mrs. Bennett said,
"Jane, I didn't have the slightest idea you..."
"No," Jane said, "there's even more. I'm marrying Chip Bingley, and I know it might sound odd, but we've decided to let our wedding be filmed for an eligible special. Even though the special won't air until April, it's supposed to happen very soon, this December 11th to 13th in Palm Springs. The thing I want most in the world is for all of you to be there." "Okay, now I'm finished." There was a cacophony of voices, and at last Liz said,
"It's really hard to understand you guys unless you speak one at a time." "I thought Chip was back in Los Angeles and you were living with those ladies in the country," Mrs. Bennett said.
"He is," Jane said, "and I have been, although I'm moving to L.A., but Chip came here to visit."
"I wonder if they can film you just from the neck up," Mrs. Bennett said. "Or they can do what they did when that curly-haired gal on the sitcom got pregnant, and you can carry a grocery bag in front of you."
"My pregnancy won't be a secret," Jane said. "They'll definitely show it."
"Can they tell people the baby is Chip's?" Mrs. Bennett asked.
"Aren't you guys excited to be grandparents?" Liz said. "And aunts?"
"Jane, now that you mention it, your tits did get kind of huge before you left Cincinnati," Lydia said.
"There's no way I'm going on eligible," Mary said. "And why would you want to marry Chip? He has no backbone."
"Mary, men get confused," Mrs. Bennett said. "Chip comes from a lovely family, and he'll make a devoted husband."
Deploying a strategy she and Liz had discussed in advance, Jane said,
"Mary, I was hoping you'd read a poem during the ceremony."
"No," Mary said. "Jane, congratulations," Ham said. "This is fantastic news."
Until he'd spoken, Liz hadn't been certain he was present.
"As long as we're making announcements," Kitty said, "then I have one too. I'm dating Shane now, so he should come with me."
Simultaneously, Mr. Bennett said, "The realtor?" And Mrs. Bennett said,
"The black man?"
"We're expanding your horizons," Kitty replied. "Welcome to the 21st century."
"Then I also have an announcement," Lydia said, and her voice sounded more tentative than usual. "Mary, I still don't like you, but I shouldn't have tried to force you out of the closet. Your gayness is your business."
Snippily, Mary said,
"I'm not gay."
"She bowls," Kitty said. "That's what she does."
In a shaky voice, Mrs. Bennett said,
"Now what on earth is bowls?"
"As in bowling balls," Kitty said. "The sport."
"How do you know?" Mary asked, and Kitty said,
"Mary, I'm your roommate now."
Mr. Bennett cleared his throat.
"Anyone else with a confession?" he said. "Lizzie?"
"Not today," Liz said.
Mrs. Bennett said,
"Jane, we'll need to invite the Lucases and Hickmans and Nesbitts to your wedding. Oh, and the Hoffs. They'd all be very hurt otherwise."
"They're only letting us invite 20 people," Jane said.
Everyone will know it was just immediate family, Mom, Liz said. The proof will be on TV.
You'll all need to sign non-disclosure agreements, and the producers are very serious about them, Jane said. That means you can't talk about the wedding before it airs, especially not on social media, Kitty and Lydia. But something fun is that there'll be wardrobe and makeup people to help us look great. Isn't that neat?
Tell them my look is contemporary but classic, Mrs. Bennett said. And I don't care for navy blue.
I'm not wearing makeup, Mary said. The texture of foundation disgusts me.
Dad, what do you think? Jane asked. You've been quiet.
Before Mr. Bennett could reply, Mrs. Bennett said,
Why don't they come here and film at Knox Church? Knox does an elegant service.
I think it's easier for them to shoot in California, Jane said.
Dad?
You're 40 years old, Jane. If you want to make a spectacle of yourself, I can hardly stop you.
Fred, Chip is a Harvard-educated doctor whose family started Bingley Manufacturing, Mrs. Bennett said. He's very distinguished.
Is that really what you think, Dad?
Jane sounded distraught.
Jane, let them get used to the idea, Liz said. You can't expect them all to be jumping for joy right away.
You do realize we can hear you, right? Mary said.
Tell them the last thing,
Liz said to Jane, and Mr. Bennett said,
To top what's come so far, it had better have to do with alien abduction or bestiality.
You'll each get paid about $30,000, Jane said.
Sorry, him, not you, but the rest of you.
Ha, Kitty said. Do you still not like the texture of foundation, Mary?
In that case, Mr. Bennett said. This sounds like an excellent opportunity for our entire family.
Chapter 167. 12 days later, on the plane to Phoenix, where they'd board a second plane for Palm Springs, for both flights Liz was disappointed but unsurprised to find they were flying coach, Jane said,
In all the hubbub, I haven't even formally asked, but I've been assuming you'll be my maid of honor. Will you?
Of course, Liz said.
Just so you know, Darcy will be Chip's best man. You're okay with that, right? You and Darcy seemed very civil at the restaurant.
That Darcy would attend the wedding was a likelihood to which Liz had reconciled herself. After all, as Chip's friend and Caroline's beau, he was doubly connected to the Bingleys. She had considered the possibility that what she presumed was his disdain for reality television, combined with his inflexible schedule, would result in his absence. But she'd recognized that such a conclusion was probably wishful thinking. However, that he would be the best man was not an eventuality she'd entertained.
Chip feels indebted to Darcy, Jane continued. We wouldn't be getting married if not for him making that dinner happen.
Or maybe if not for him, you wouldn't have broken up in the first place, Liz said.
But I still would have been pregnant.
A look of worry crossed Jane's pretty features.
Lizzie, the media stuff will blow over quickly, don't you think? When people appear in tabloids all the time, aren't they in cahoots with the reporters?
Kind of, Liz said. But with the baby born by the time your wedding airs, I'm sure there'll be a bounty for pictures of the eligible offspring.
Jane shuddered. Does Chip expect that Caroline will be your manager now, too? Liz asked. Do they want you to shill for, like, a diaper company? Jane shook her head.
He told me the night he proposed that I'm the only person he's met since he appeared on TV who loves him for him and isn't trying to ride his coattails. He knows I have no desire for fame. He wouldn't say it, but Lizzie,
I think he even wonders if Caroline is using him a little.
A little? Liz repeated. He wonders.
The house we'll live in after the wedding is in a gated community in Burbank, Jane said. I hope it's not weird being so isolated. I'm actually excited about L.A., but I'll be happy when everything with eligible is finished.
I know you will, Liz said. Though what she thought was, everything with eligible hasn't even started.
Chapter 168. Liz, Jane, and Chip had arrived in Palm Springs a day earlier than their families in order for Jane and Chip to attend to various obligations, including fittings for their wedding clothes, on-camera interviews, and filming of B-roll footage. Jane walked pensively and alone on the resort's golf course, and then they both sat by the pool, gazing at the sunset, his hands placed protectively on her belly. A team of six from the national jewelry chain that was indeed a sponsor of the show held a consultation in which the couple chose from an array of rings. This meeting was also, of course, caught on camera. Liz had expected the Hermoso Desert Lodge to be mostly empty upon their arrival, but after being met at the airport luggage carousel by Anne Lee, who proved to be a poised, unpretentious woman with stylishly cut black hair and a quick laugh, as well as a driver who hefted their suitcases into his white van, Liz discovered that the resort was already abuzz with a production crew of perhaps 80. Indeed, the entire grounds, the main lodge with its pink stucco exterior and Spanish-tiled roof, the elegant courtyard featuring a slate hot tub and a heated infinity pool, the lush 18-hole golf course dotted with palm trees beyond which stood the scrubby beige mountains, resembled a small but busy village. Men and women, though mostly men, wore dark T-shirts and cargo pants, moved about briskly, and spoke into walkie-talkies. Trucks and vans came and went from the parking lot, around the perimeter of which trailers and tents had been set up. Collapsed ladders, large black plastic buckets, coils of thick orange extension cords, and mysterious equipment inside stacked black suitcases were transported on large dollies. Long tables of craft services food appeared at intervals in the parking lot. Crew members flocked to them, and then just as quickly both the people and the food disappeared again. Eventually, Liz deduced that some sort of control room was being set up in a first-floor guest suite that opened onto the courtyard. Black twill fabric was unrolled to cover the windows from the inside, and people seemed to enter and exit with particular urgency. The room Liz and Jane were sharing included two double beds, a balcony, Liz's point of observation for outdoor activity, and a fireplace. On the desk, a gift basket contained a fat white scented candle, two pairs of pearl earrings, hair removal cream, razors, mini bottles of rum and vodka, and three-string bikinis with padded breast cups. The attached card read, "Liz and Jane, welcome to Palm Springs from all your eligible friends." Liz held up the bikini top. "Is this meant for me?" Jane smiled. "It's not for me, obviously." In her other hand, Liz held up the package of pink razors. "Very subtle." Much wasn't quite as Liz had expected. Her cell phone would not be confiscated, nor had the television been removed from their hotel room. "That's just for the longer shoots," Anne Lee had explained when she'd escorted them upstairs, before pointing out what she referred to as a Pelco camera. It looked to Liz like a security camera, hanging in one corner of the room near the ceiling. "Just to catch any fun, casual conversations you guys might have," Anne said in a light-hearted tone, and for Jane's sake, Liz refrained from jokes about communist surveillance. The hair and makeup artists Jane had mentioned would be working with guests besides Jane and Chip only for the wedding itself. Jane seemed surprised to learn this, and apologetic. So otherwise, Liz was responsible for her own appearance. And though, as the sister whose wedding wasn't imminent, Liz had anticipated having time to enjoy the lodge's amenities, perhaps by booking a massage, or, before she realized how public it was, soaking in the hot tub, she, too, was kept busy. Her own sit-down interview occurred the first evening, while Jane and Chip enjoyed an intimate dinner in the hotel restaurant that Jane subsequently told Liz had been filmed by 2 camera crews of 3 men each. Upon discovering that prior to the wedding, she and Jane, rather than Jane and Chip, were sharing a room, Liz had assumed Jane would sneak out during the night to see her fiancé. But if she did, Liz realized, the Pelco camera would alert the producers, and a camera crew would likely materialize. It was Anne Lee who conducted Liz's interview, in the living room of a first-floor suite. A man stood behind a camera set on a tripod. 2 panel lights were mounted on separate tripods, and there was much adjusting of the lights, the furniture, and even of Liz's posture. She sat in a brocade-covered chair, and Anne sat off-camera in an identical chair facing her. "We're so excited for this amazing love story between your sister and Chip," Anne said warmly. "And America will be so excited, too." Since the initial conference call, Anne had been Jane's primary contact. When Jane spoke positively about the eligible people she'd met, she mostly meant Anne. And indeed, it was Anne and a crew of 4 who had flown to Cincinnati the week prior to interview assorted Bennetts. An impulse to travel there herself for purposes of supervision and possible intervention had arisen in Liz, but she'd been scheduled to conduct 2 mascara interviews of her own on back-to-back days in New York. Plus, wasn't all this eligible stuff not in her jurisdiction? Still, she had been unsettled rather than reassured by her family members' universal praise of Anne Lee, or, as Mrs. Bennett referred to her, "that nice Chinese girl," though Liz suspected Anne was of Korean descent. The more favorable everyone else's opinion, the more suspicious of Anne Liz had become, and meeting in person hadn't allayed Liz's concerns. It was that Anne was so upbeat, so easy to talk to, so reassuring about what a nutty situation this was, and above all, so totally not fake-seeming that Liz distrusted her primarily on the basis of her very trustworthiness. It was no wonder that at this woman's behest, hundreds of Americans had gotten inebriated, fought, stripped, canoodled, and divulged secrets, all with cameras rolling. "What I need you to do," Anne was saying, "is talk in complete sentences, which should be no problem since you're obviously super smart. But if I say, 'What's your favorite color?' I need you to say, 'My favorite color is blue,' as opposed to just 'blue.' Is that cool?" "You might already know that I'm a journalist," Liz said. "I'm the writer-at-large for Mascara, so I'm definitely familiar with how interviews work, although I'm accustomed to being on the other side." "Fantastic," Anne beamed. "Now, TV is a different medium, and I won't be saying, uh-huh, or laughing, even if you say the most hilarious thing ever, because I don't want to make noise while you're talking. If you lose your train of thought, no worries. Just pause and start over. And you don't need to censor yourself. Talk how you normally talk. And if you drop an F-bomb, we'll bleep it out. This isn't live." "Just please don't Franken-bite me," Liz said, and Anne looked at her blankly. "Isn't that what it's called?" Liz said. "When you take one word I said here and one word there and put them together into a sentence that you use as a voiceover?" "I've never heard that term." Anne was still smiling. "You're funny, though. Okay, to get us going, how about if you tell me your name, your relationship to Jane, your age, and where you're from?" Bullshit, Liz thought. Bullshit you've never heard it. Aloud, she said, "I'm Liz Bennett. I'm Jane's sister, the sister closest in age to her. I'm 38 years old, and I live in New York." The interview lasted for an hour, and Anne was, Liz had to admit, highly competent. She asked all the questions Liz herself would have, and also skilled at disguising her attempts to look for points of tension or vulnerability. The bulk of the questions were about Jane, her journey as a single woman, her love story with Chip, though Anne also inquired about alliances and discord within the Bennett family and about Liz's own love life. On this front, Liz was graciously tight-lipped. Liz learned with relief that Anne was aware of Ham's transgender status, and thus it was not up to Liz to divulge or conceal it. But on one topic, Liz was unhappy with her own lack of discretion. "You know Chip's sister Caroline, don't you?" Anne asked near the end of the hour, and Liz said, "Yes, I know Caroline Bingley. What's your opinion of her?" Liz was tired, both from traveling, it was midnight Eastern time, and from answering Anne's questions. "She's fine," Liz said. "You sound kind of tepid," Anne said, and as ever, her tone was friendly. "Are you sure that's how you feel?" "Caroline Bingley is charming," Liz said in a jokingly posh voice. "She's delightful." Then she looked directly at the camera guy and said, "Don't use that." "Why don't you want him to use it?" Anne asked. "Are you being sarcastic?" Simultaneously, Liz felt regret surge through her, and she felt a desire to speak candidly to Anne, to say, "I'm exhausted. I need to go back to my room and sleep. I don't like Caroline Bingley, but surely you can understand how publicly disparaging my sister's new sister-in-law will only create problems that will long outlast your television special. As one professional woman to another, let's strike that from the record." "Did something happen between you and Caroline?" Anne said. Liz shook her head. "I do like Caroline," she said. "I'm kidding around." "Do you find her bitchy?" Anne asked. "I've heard that some people find her bitchy." Liz laughed. She couldn't help it. She said, "Which people?" "It's just the word on the street." Again, Liz was tempted to acknowledge the preposterousness of the conversation, to say, "I understand exactly what you're trying to do." Instead, firmly, she said, "Well, I've always gotten along well with Caroline." On returning to her room, Liz looked up Frankenbiting online. There were many search results. They went back as far as 2004, and the term meant exactly what she'd thought it did. Chapter 169. "Lizzie, I don't know why you never got married," Lydia said. "It's really fun. I make steak for Ham when he's finished teaching at night, and I totally feel like a grown-up." Shortly after the Cincinnati contingent's arrival at the Hermoso Desert Lodge, they were a party of seven, counting not only the Bennets but also Ham and Shane. Lydia and Kitty had come to inspect their sister's quarters. On the same hall, Lydia and Ham were sharing a room, as were Kitty and Shane. Mary had been assigned her own room, which made Liz wonder why she herself hadn't, until she recalled Anne Lee's remark about the Pelco camera capturing her and Jane's fun, casual conversations. Liz was newly determined to provide no such thing. Jane was away, but Lydia and Kitty had made themselves at home on her bed, in spite of the fact that Liz was sitting at the desk, laptop open, trying to finish writing the toast she would deliver at the reception. Without looking up, Liz said, "When I started working full-time and paying my rent is when I felt like a grown-up. And that was, she pretended to calculate, 16 years ago. "Don't you want someone to come home to at night?" Lydia said. "I'd be so bored living alone." "Then I guess it's a good thing you don't." "If Jane's baby turns out cute," Lydia said, "maybe Ham and I will use the same sperm donor she did." "Your kids will be doubly related," Kitty said. "That's weird." "It's just some dude's jizz," Lydia said. "He won't be part of their lives. Anyway, sometimes two brothers marry two sisters, and their kids are double cousins. Jessica and Rachel Finholt married brothers.
I hate Jessica Finn Holt, Kitty said. In kindergarten, she stole my Raggedy Ann out of my cubby.
Kitty was paging through a brochure that had been lying on the nightstand.
Do we have to pay for spa services here?
Liz glanced over her shoulder.
I'm sure.
It's such a waste that Jane is getting married on Eligible when she doesn't even watch it, Lydia said.
Don't you think Ham and I would make a good reality TV show?
She wasn't wrong, which wasn't the same as the idea being a wise one.
Mildly, so as not to encourage Lydia, Liz said, I bet living with all those cameras would annoy you guys.
She stood.
Both of you, follow me.
She walked into the bathroom, and Lydia and Kitty looked quizzically at each other. Lydia said,
Are you going to teach us how to do monthly self-exams of our boobs?
Just come here, Liz said.
When they joined her, she closed the door and lowered her voice to a whisper.
Did you notice that camera hanging in the corner of the room?
She said.
Don't say anything the whole time you're here that you don't want to be on TV. I'm serious.
Like what? Lydia asked.
The lecture was probably, at best, useless. At worst, it could promote the opposite of the behavior Liz hoped to encourage. The producers don't care if we look good or bad, Liz said. All they're trying to do is create TV that people want to watch. Just don't say anything nasty about anyone else, and don't pick fights.
It was hard not to think of the intemperate remarks she herself had made the night before about Caroline Bingley.
They'll be looking for conflict.
Lydia laughed.
I doubt they'll have to look that hard.
Liz sighed.
Fine, she said. Do what you want. But I warned you.
Chapter 170 In her parents' room, Liz found her mother bustling about and her father sitting in an armchair, an enormous hardcover book about the Renaissance open on his lap. The room contained just one king-size bed. Surely, Liz thought, it would be the first time in years her parents had slept beneath the same sheets. From the bathroom, her mother said,
I can't find the hair dryer. When I called the front desk, they said it's here. But Lizzie, they forgot to give us one.
Liz entered the bathroom and pointed to the shelf below the sink.
It's right there, Mom.
Irritably, Mrs. Bennett said, Well, it wasn't there before. As she picked it up, she added,
I think it's much better if they say Jane's baby is Chips. People who are watching will be confused otherwise.
Have you seen Jane yet? Liz asked. She looks good, doesn't she?
With great confidence, Mrs. Bennett said, She's carrying low. That means a boy. In the hushed tone she used for delicate matters, Mrs. Bennett said,
Liz, I don't know if Kitty and Shane are serious, but life can be very hard for mulatto children.
Liz winced.
I wouldn't say that to either of them.
Fitzwilliam Darcy is Chip's best man.
Mrs. Bennett now sounded oddly approving, even before she added,
It speaks well of Chip that he has such high-quality friends. Is Fitzwilliam single?
When and why had her mother developed a favorable opinion of Darcy? Back in July at the Lucas's party, Mrs. Bennett had been offended by him on Liz's behalf.
He's going out with Chip's sister, Liz said.
What a shame, Mrs. Bennett frowned.
Now we also need to make sure the Chinese girl knows to say on the show that Ham's situation is a birth defect. People might think it's disgusting otherwise, but if they know it's a birth defect, they'll understand.
Her mother's belief that she could, via Ann Lee, control the narrative of the Eligible special? It was, Liz thought, so utterly wrong that there was no point in trying to correct it. As if sensing Liz's disloyal musings, Mrs. Bennett looked intently at her.
Don't you think it's confusing if they say Jane got pregnant from a man she doesn't know?
Mom, that's not the way anyone would describe donor insemination. And no, I don't think it's a difficult concept to grasp.
I think it's nicer if they say the baby is Chip's.
But it's not true.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Mrs. Bennett said. That doesn't matter.
Chapter 171. As when she'd returned to Cincinnati for the closing of the Tudor, Liz was constantly alert to the possibility of encountering Darcy. With the bachelor and bachelorette parties just hours away that evening, surely he'd arrived on the property, but even by standing on the balcony and surveying the grounds at regular intervals, she hadn't spotted him. Though, she reflected, perhaps not seeing him at all was better than spying him and Caroline strolling arm in arm on the golf course. The balcony did afford Liz a bird's-eye view of the courtyard meeting between Mr. and Mrs. Bennett and Mr. and Mrs. Bingley, which, of course, was also attended by Jane and Chip. This summit took place around a table on which was set a handsome flower arrangement, champagne flutes, and no food. Though Liz couldn't hear the conversation, there was no doubt it would exist for posterity. A man held a boom mic a few feet above the heads of the family members. Two more men with cameras on their shoulders stood just behind the families, and freestanding lights illuminated the proceedings as dusk fell. Mrs. Bingley was a slim woman with a classic blonde bob, wearing beige capri pants, a matching beige jacket, beige flats, a pale purple silk scarf, and no smile. She was recognizable to Liz as the sort of woman who played tennis at the Cincinnati Country Club, who was rather like certain friends of the plumper and frumpier Mrs. Bennett. Mr. Bingley looked like an older version of Chip. With gray hair parted on one side, he wore a dark blue suit, a white Oxford cloth shirt, and a green bow tie. Liz felt too much anxiety on Jane's behalf to observe the interaction in its entirety, and she soon went back inside to shower and dress for the evening. Jane returned to the room an hour later, accompanied by Ann Lee, two makeup artists, and a wardrobe stylist.
"How'd it go with the Bingleys?"
Liz asked, and Jane said,
"Great. His mom does a lot of yoga."
Jane was visibly mic'd. The mic pack was behind her back, and the actual mic was clipped to the inside collar of her shirt. But if there was some coded, contradictory message she wished to send Liz, Liz saw no evidence of it. Jane's happiness seemed genuine. While her sister's makeup was retouched in the bedroom, Liz applied her own in the bathroom, with the door closed, before rejoining the others. Jane's beautification process was still underway when, as scheduled, a production assistant and an audio guy knocked on the door. The audio guy mic'd Liz, and the assistant escorted her to the entrance of the lodge. Two film crews and a black limousine waited in the driveway. And when Liz entered the limo, she was purposely wearing fancy jeans rather than a skirt, she took care to angle herself into the car in the least buttocks-displaying manner possible. Inside the limo, she discovered yet another camera crew waiting, though she was the first guest. Addressing the man holding the camera, he was a 40-something guy with gray stubble and a baseball cap, she said, "Are we going to a restaurant tonight or more of a nightclub?" After a pause, the guy said,
"We're not supposed to talk about the show with you. If you have questions, ask a producer."
The production assistant who'd escorted Liz from her room had vanished. Glancing among the camera guy, a guy who wore thick black headphones, and a third guy whose role seemed to be related to lighting, Liz said,
"Do you all work for Eligible full-time?"
"I do,"
the camera guy said. He nodded toward the other men.
"They don't."
"How long have you..."
Liz began. But she didn't finish the question because Caroline Bingley was climbing into the limo. In those first few seconds of their seeing each other, Liz could have sworn Caroline's nostrils flared with distaste.
"Hello, Liz," she said in a cool tone.
"Hi, Caroline."
Liz was highly conscious of both the camera crew and her mic pack. She could feel the pack between her back and the seat. She said,
"I guess none of us would have found ourselves here if you hadn't nominated Chip to be on Eligible way back when, huh?"
"Your family must be thrilled," Caroline said.
And Liz tried to infuse her voice with extra friendliness as she replied,
"And yours even more so."
Liz's acting experience had begun and ended with a chorus role in a Seven Hills Middle School production of Oliver. And yet, as the evening proceeded, Liz had the odd sense of once again participating in a play, of being obliged, above all, not to break character, with her character in this case, the kind and supportive sister of the bride. Caroline and Liz were next joined by Mary, then Kitty and Lydia appeared together, then Chip's older sister, Brooke, whose existence Liz had been unaware of until the moment she entered the limousine. She was the eldest of the three siblings, apparently, the married mother of an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, all of whom lived near Mr. and Mrs. Bingley in the suburbs of Philadelphia. At last, Jane materialized, to applause that, at least on Liz's part, was heartfelt. As the limousine pulled away from the lodge, the tinted window separating the driver from the passengers descended, and Anne Lee grinned and held up 2 bottles of champagne. Of course Anne Lee was there, and of course she was holding up 2 bottles of champagne.
"Who's ready for the best bachelorette party ever?" she called out.
Chapter 172. They ate dinner in the private room of a restaurant, where at first the conversation was highly stilted. When Liz went to use the restroom, Anne Lee, who'd been standing behind a camera, intercepted her and asked in her untrustworthily normal way,
"How do you think it's going?"
"Fine,"
Liz said.
"You don't feel like things are awkward?"
"We don't know Chip's sisters that well," Liz said. "I just met Brooke tonight."
"And there's that tension between you and Caroline."
Anne's expression was one of eminent sympathy.
"Maybe it's better to speak your mind to her before the wedding. Like, clear the air and come out closer, you know?"
Liz had decided in advance that she'd consume no more than 2 drinks. After champagne in the limo, a vodka cocktail upon arrival at the restaurant, and a glass of wine with the meal, she'd already exceeded this limit. But she still found Anne far from convincing. She smiled with her mouth closed.
"I told you, I have no problem with Caroline."
It was shortly after the entrees had been cleared that a knock sounded on the door of the private room. Liz guessed it would be Chip, but when the door opened, it was a cop and a firefighter, or, as Liz soon discerned through her 4th drink, male strippers wearing cop and firefighter uniforms. Liz wouldn't soon forget the sight of them gyrating around pregnant, sober Jane. She was the only one not drinking, their oiled pecs displayed as they removed their clothing, save for a pair of briefs each, plus, in the firefighter's case, a helmet, suspenders, and boots, and in the cop's case, a peaked blue cap and handcuffs that dangled from one wrist. The strippers proceeded to dance with some of the other women to Beyoncé's Single Ladies. Lydia and Kitty swiveled their hips and wiggled their bottoms with particular enthusiasm. Liz shimmied around enough to seem, she hoped, like a good sport. And even Brooke took a turn grinding the firefighter, which made Liz like her significantly more. But both Mary and Caroline watched with disdain and shook their heads when beckoned to join. The strippers had just left when there was another knock on the door, which, once again, was not Chip. This time, it was Rick Price, Eligible's host. Among the women, a spontaneous cheer went up, which Liz was surprised to find herself joining, and this was when, she was on her 5th drink,
She realized both that she was completely drunk, not just tipsy, not merely buzzed, and also that she was much happier than she'd been an hour or two before. She felt a retroactive remorse for all the eligible contestants she'd deemed trashy and idiotic from the comfort of her living room. Apparently, like teriyaki pizza and bee venom facials, getting wasted on a reality TV show was not to be knocked until tried.
"I hear there's been lots of craziness going on," Rick Price said in a teasing tone, and the women cheered again. "I've just come from seeing the guys, and they've issued you a challenge. They want you to join them at this super cool club for a game we're calling the Not Yet Wed game. Are you girls in?"
There was even more cheering, and as it wound down, Liz heard Mary say, "Can I go back to the hotel?" When they were all in the limo again, however, Mary was next to Liz.
"This sucks," Mary said. "It's exactly how I thought it would be."
"At least you're getting paid." Presumably, the acknowledgement that money was changing hands would never be aired, but in case there was any doubt, and also just for kicks, Liz looked directly at the camera and smiled grandly. The club was empty except for Chip's entourage. The game was to occur in a lounge area that contained orange and red sofas and chairs. Even before she'd entered the lounge proper, Liz saw Darcy sitting between Shane and Chip, holding a glass of what looked like scotch, his expression grim. The other men present were Ham and Chip's brother-in-law, whose name was Nick. And Liz abruptly thought that if the women's dinner had been awkward, the men's must have been almost unendurable. Because truly,